Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 4th of May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Preston Aramsamy, I want to touch on Aspen. That stock's down almost 50% since its highs of late last year. And of course, the Fed rate decision later tonight. Jeb McIntosh from Combined Motor Holdings on results, record profits and margins. Sean Saunders from Revex on a newly launched savings vault in the crypto space. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb Renegen reports a 36.8% increase in revenue, updates the market on its progress of its Virginia gas project. That's the big story. Phase one, cold commissioning is progressing well. CNBC, Fed expected to raise rates by half a point. Central Bank is also expected to launch a program to reduce its massive bond holdings by up to $95 billion a month starting in June. That's perhaps the bigger story there. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ up 0.1%. Asia is red, Sydney down 0.1%. Tokyo closed for greenery day, and it closed again tomorrow. Commodities, green overnight, gold, $1,865. Brent, $106.03 a barrel. Platinum, $964 an ounce. Palladium, $2,269 an ounce. Rand, $15.76. Opening call for the top 40, about 360 points to the red. That's about 0.6%. That as 10 cent trades down 3.3%. And let me correct myself, it's Wednesday, not Tuesday.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Preston Aramsamy, a portfolio manager at Nedbank Private Wealth. Preston, definitely Wednesday. Aspen, I've been away for a couple of weeks. Apparently so have you. I get back and I have a look at the Aspen chart. And after, 280-odd back in sort of September, October last year, all the way back to the mid-160s. Is there some value here? Am I missing something perhaps more significant?
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, Simon, I'd just like to quickly just touch on, 2 months back, their results. They came out with pretty strong revenue numbers, so some good support on the manufacturing side of their business. And, Simon, the problem with this business has been debt in the past. And now if you look at their net debt to EBITDA, we're sitting at around the 1.7 times level. So, their covenant's at 3.5. So it's fairly well contained for now, Simon. So, of course, the negative news, the J&J vaccine deal, and, of course, no orders yet on, the Aspenovac front. So this has definitely hurt the share price yesterday, Simon, in particular. But, yeah, Simon, barring this, based on their last result, it seemed like a pretty strong one. The company has a good product mix, good cost management. EBIT margins are still well above the 20% odd level, so good margins. And even delving into the details, Simon, both the commercial pharmaceuticals and their manufacturing business, they're growing. So if you had to ask me, Simon, about this business, on a long-term sort of investment case and whether it's still intact, I'd say definitely yes. It's probably a bad couple of months from a share price perspective and on the vaccine front. But there's also things happening in the background. Financial position could strengthen even more. Management team seems to be grinding away, trying to increase capacity utilization rates on its sterile manufacturing part of the business. So, Simon, longer term, I think, this business is probably positioned well. Margins could increase as well if supply chain issues do normalize. So it seems like a good base for future growth. That seems to have been formed at these levels. And the key thing, Simon, balance sheet strong, a fair amount of headroom, optionality. And, if you look at this business relative to the MSCI, EM Pharma Index, it's still trading at a discount, Simon. So I don't think the valuation is demanding. I think it's a top quality business. And probably time, you know, maybe to venture in at these levels.
Yeah, PE 12 and a half, not bad. I mean, I remember the stocks had PEs of closer to 40 at points in time. And as you mentioned, a great looking balance sheet. A quick last question. Federal Open Monetary Policy Committee this evening, otherwise known as the folks who are going to decide on US interest rates. Almost certain it's going to be 0.5%. I mean, is that a fair shout? And that's what the market is anticipating, so it won't get too freaked by it.
Yeah, Simon. So, yeah, since the last meeting, of course, you know, we know the outlook for economic growth, of course, deteriorated. More risks have emerged with respect to geopolitical tensions and inflation. So I think, yeah, 50 is still the number. But I think, you know, there's a lot more nervousness heading into the meeting, just given some of these risks. But yeah, Simon, by and large, 50 is the number. I think the futures market still pricing in roughly 2.5 percentage points of hiking, for this year. Mm. But I think, you know, Simon, what the market's going to eye is just comments from the Fed and, the view on, you know, how hawkish they'll be going forward. So, of course, this will impact the market's view on the level of incremental hikes going forward. So everyone's going to be eyeing commentary on next steps. And yeah, Simon, I guess if there's any fear that the Fed might be hiking faster than previously anticipated, then we could see, you know, further impact on the market, in particular long duration equities or tech stocks. So I think from Powell's perspective, he's likely going to follow script from the last meeting, brush away any questions on the pace of, you know, the Fed's hiking cycle. And I mean, there'll probably be very little commitment to specifics as possible. But yeah, the question will be probably asked anyway. So yeah, Simon, 50 is the number. I guess there is a slight possibility of a 75 basis point hike, but it's probably a very low probability, you know, based on comments coming out of the meeting. So yeah, it'll probably, you know, impact the market's view on the pace and quantum of hikes going forward. So yeah, Simon, 50 is the number there, but yeah, we'll watch to see what the comments are forward looking.
And I take your point. It's going to be commentary more than anything else, perhaps. Pearson Aram, semi-portfolio manager at Nedbank Private Wealth. That's our poll today on our Twitter and LinkedIn. What do you think the Fed is going to do? Have your vote, have your say.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Jeb McIntosh, CEO Combined Motor Holdings. Disclaimer, I hold shares in CMH. Results for year end February, dividend up 135%, headline earnings per share up 117%, cash up 8% at 817 million. It's about 40% of market cap. Jeb, appreciate the time this morning. Before the results, I just quickly want to touch on the Durban floods, which of course are post the period that you're reporting on. The impact on that, I mean, the Toyota manufacturing is right there down at Prospecton where we saw visuals of freeways underwater. Of course, Durban Port where a lot of vehicles are going through. What is the impact on what is, I imagine, a still tight supply chain for motor vehicles?
Morning, Simon. Simon, you're 100% right. We believe that the Toyota factory will be closed for approximately 12 weeks whilst they clean out the mud and sort out the electronics, etc. One of our branches was completely flooded in the Bluff area, but we've got that back in business already, so that's a positive. But as you said, the logistics issue has been a major one during the past year, and I think that the closure of the port, etc., certainly won't help those matters.
And the logistics, I mean, we've been talking and I've been chatting, you know, with yourself and other CEOs and in allied industries and the industries. Yes. And we keep on thinking that the chip scenario is going to resolve in the next 6 to 12 months and it just keeps on going down the road. I saw Intel saying that they're actually expecting it to remain in place in 2024. I mean, inventory levels remain tight. Is that still seeing an opportunity perhaps for better margins, but also people moving to previously owned?
Simon, the first part of the question, it does seem to just be continuing. And I think one of the problems is that most of the manufacturers are using, let's call them old-level chips, and the new factories are building on new-level chips, and without redesigning their motor cars completely, they won't be able to use the new chips. So I think this problem is going to continue for some time. Moving into pre-owned cars is also problematic, with restricted new car sales, you're getting less used cars coming onto the market. And in many cases, they're really too old to be called pre-owned. The mileage is too high. So pre-owned cars are also very short in the marketplace. And the car hire industry has also been battling to get sufficient cars, so they aren't depleting. So all in all, there's a shortage both in new and used motor cars.
And to these results, record headline earnings per share, operating margin at 5.4%. As far back as I could, as I was checking yesterday evening, that's a record number as well. How much of this is sort of, I suppose, this is not a base effect because these are record levels. How much of it is that Combined Motor Holdings has in many senses perhaps come out of the pandemic a stronger and better business than it went into the pandemic?
Look, Simon, I think we are stronger and better business. We took some very tough decisions during the pandemic, especially the early stages. And I think those have paid off. But more to the point, we've managed to multi-franchise many of our operations. And over the past three years, we've added 22 operations into our existing infrastructure without adding any extra branches or fixed property. And we're busy putting in place another six operations right as we sit here. And that spreading of costs has made a major difference. That's also helped us tremendously with the shortage of stock in various of the more popular brands, should we call them. That has helped to balance out. Supply from India and China has been a little bit more regular than European supply, should I say.
Car rental, you touched on that. First Car Rental is your brand in that space. A very strong period from that. And you took as I recall, during the pandemic, you didn't, I suppose, you know, knee-jerk panic and defleet. And that's left you in a very strong position now as, you know, people are starting to rent vehicles again, and that you've got decent levels of stock to rent out.
Yes, our stock levels are higher than pre-pandemic. But the whole market appears to be at about 66% of what they were previously. So we definitely have picked up market share during this period.
We'll leave that there. That's Jeb McIntosh, CEO, Combined Motor Holdings, talking results for the year ending February.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Check now, Sean Saunders, CEO at Revix. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. I'm looking at a 5-year chart of Bitcoin at the moment, and it's been under pressure. It was 70,000 sort of mid last year, down to sub 38 as we talk. But the bigger picture here is it certainly is lower. But what I'm seeing is that this is not unusual for Bitcoin in particular, crypto generally, to kind of move into these consolidation patterns. We had one just ahead of the pandemic where for about a year it traded at around the 10,500 level point. We talk about crypto under pressure, but it was 10,500 just 2 years ago.
Morning, Simon. Thanks very much for having me on again. I think that's exactly it, right? Within the crypto space, when in doubt, zoom out. You look out at sort of that longer term price chart, and that's really what's got so many people excited about the space. Mm. It has grown faster than any other asset class ever. And naturally, I think, you know, with sort of that, what is with Bitcoin, about 115-odd% compound annual growth rate over the last 5 years. I mean, naturally, you're going to have a period where you see a rather big decline. And that's what we've experienced more recently. What's interesting to note, though, is you've had near record amounts of Bitcoin and Ethereum removed from exchanges, though, around the world. Mm. So you had just this last month, 48 billion Rand, that's 96,000 Bitcoins removed from exchanges. And that's sort of like the net flow. So more Bitcoin being removed from the exchanges rather than going to the exchanges. And you had nearly 30% of all of the Ether tokens, so that's Ethereum's token, removed from exchanges. And that's usually an indicator of accumulation, right? So both retail and institutional investors choosing rather not to hold assets on exchanges, but rather sort of hold them in wallets for the long term. And usually that's actually a bullish indicator. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting next few weeks and months ahead for the world of crypto.
Yeah, I take your point to that. And I have crypto and it doesn't sit in an exchange because I don't intend to trade it anytime soon. So it sits in a wallet, nice and safe and simple. That's a fascinating stat. Talk to us a bit about your savings vault, which you've recently launched. And we've seen some of these products sort of coming into the crypto space and generating some yield on what would otherwise normally be a non-yielding asset.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, I mean, the intention with Revex over the next couple months is to really introduce savings vaults for all the different top cryptocurrencies. So that's for Bitcoin, that's for Ethereum, that's for Solana, Polkadot, et cetera, et cetera. The first savings vault that we've launched is a USDC. So that's a dollar-based savings vault. Mm-hmm. Currently, you can earn 9% through the savings vault. And it acts very much like a savings account. I mean, if you had never sort of utilized our savings vault and you came to our platform, it's near identical to that bank savings account that you have where you get accumulated interest every single day. If you utilize the savings vault for a 1 month period, you pay absolutely no fees whatsoever on the vault itself. And I mean, that's really just the simplicity of what we're trying to do at Revex, right? We're trying to make, and this is now going into a sales pitch, but what we're trying to do is just make DeFi simple. Because, yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was on the show talking about how these yields are actually generated. And it's a bit complicated, right? You're talking about sort of earning yield within the DeFi space, utilizing protocols, algorithmic stablecoins. I mean, there's a lot of jargon just in what I've said right now, never mind actually executing trades and actually earning the yield. So our job is to make it simple and obviously to make it really secure within the crypto space.
And that's how, because, I mean, you know, folks would think, hang on, if I've got a real dollar and I've stuck it in a bank account, heck, I might be lucky to get 1%. This isn't going into bank account. This has then been used with in the DeFi space, and those folks who use it essentially pay a fee to you who've lent it in to that saver.
That's exactly it. So I think the most common thing that we're seeing is a lot of people have either made really big crypto gains, in some cases, I guess, crypto losses, mm-hmm. but they don't want to actually lock in those gains or losses, right, for taxable reasons and other reasons, I suppose. So what they do is they say, okay, right, instead of me selling my Bitcoin, please, can somebody give me dollars? We land up giving them dollars. We take their Bitcoin. We over-collateralize ourselves by obviously taking far more Bitcoin than the dollars we lend out, and we're able to earn a very good yield. I mean, the 9% that we're currently offering on our USDC savings vault is going to increase to 12% this Friday. So, I mean, that's 12% on an annualized basis, effectively, you know, just less than a percent a month on a compounded basis. So, I mean, that's a really high yield. And, you know, obviously with a higher yield comes, there's risk, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the risk of crypto. And that's not necessarily the price risk. It's the risk that you are dealing in this nascent market. And, you know, while it's very unlikely, certainly in my opinion, that anything major happens to the Bitcoin blockchain or the Ethereum blockchain, there is still a possibility that something can happen, right? This market's only 13 years old or going on to 13 years old. So, I mean, that's sort of the risk within the space. Institutions are coming in hard and fast, though, I can tell you. We've received more institutional interest over the last 4.5 months than we've received in the last 4 years of Revex. So there's a lot of interest in this product in particular, which, you know, I think will over the longer term drive down the yields.
Yeah, I was actually reading something on the weekend. The pension plan, I can't remember what it's the IRAs and 401k plans, that's right, in the US. Some of them are now actually bringing crypto into it. Quick last question. The yield currently 9, coming up at 12%. This is going to be, I imagine, fluctuating. It's not a fixed for the period. It's going to potentially fluctuate over time. At this point, went up. At times, it might edge lower.
So we would guarantee that yield for a 30-day period. Mm-hmm. After 30 days, we would have to adjust the yield if the prices have, and the prices being the sort of rates that we're able to earn on your cryptocurrency that you're sort of lending to us. Because when you're buying into these vaults, you need to buy USDC. So you can buy into USDC on the Revix platform, and then you would deposit USDC into one of our savings vaults. And if the rate was to decline over a period, yeah, we unfortunately at the end of the 30-day period would say to you, hey, listen, you can choose to reinvest for another 30 days, but it may be a slightly lower yield. I'm very confident that we'd probably be sitting with the 12% yields for at least the next 4 months. Mm-hmm. That's what we can see right now.
Okay, we'll leave that there. Sean Saunders, founder, CEO of Revix. Sean, as always, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Pietie Redenhuis from Herenia around U.S. markets. The worst start to the year since 1939. And that's everything. It's bonds, it's equities, it's small caps, it's large caps, it's tech, it's everything. Question was, are you buying? About a fifth of you were saying, yep, you are buying with both hands. A third of you were saying, yeah, you're buying, but you're buying a little bit carefully. And then a quarter each were saying, and the one part saying, no, not at all, waiting and seeing. And that was Pietie. He's largely saying, you know what, they're sitting in a lot of cash. They've got energy exposure, but otherwise mostly sitting in cash. And then another quarter saying, look, you buy a monthly ETF and you continue doing that. That's what I do. Monthly ETF, and that carries on. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website, the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabokle, Nicole Tetzo, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. This is MoneyWeb Now. My name is Simon Brown. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.